The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number 166. It is quite amazing that we have come this far, and thank you to everyone who has shared, who has talked about, who has told friends, families, complete strangers to continue to grow the podcast. We have an amazing person, an incredible story, and probably one of the longest podcasts that we have done. Why don't we welcome our guest for this week, and Naomi Aislin, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We like to ask this skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Naomi, who are you and where did you come from?
I am, again, Naomi Aislin. I am a wife, mother of three boys. I'm originally from Montreal, Quebec, and now I reside in Gatineau, Quebec, which is neighbor to Ottawa, Ontario.
So you are bilingual?
And I am bilingual, yes. Oh, wow. I'm actually trilingual.
Oh.
I speak French, English, and Creole.
Man, and I barely put my shoes on today. I guess you kind of got to learn French. Would you consider English your first language or is French?
My first language is French, but I tend to communicate more in English because of work and everything that I do. But at home, we speak French.
Is it tough to turn that switch on and off? Like, I mean, for somebody who only knows English and I can barely speak that well, or good. I don't know what the proper English term for that is, but is it an easy switch?
Yes, it is an easy switch for me because it's like I've been bilingual for a long period of time, so it's easy for me to switch, and sometimes I do mix them up sometimes. I say, bonjour, comment ça va? Is everything all right with you?
So yeah.
I tend to mix both of them.
Perfect. I'm sending my kids out this summer to hang out with you and your family.
Hey, they'll come back trilingual.
Perfect.
So growing up then, as you're in school, do you go to French school, you learn English, or do you go to English school and learn French?
For me, my story is a little bit different. I went to an elementary school. I went to a French school, but I lived in an English neighborhood. For me to be able to have fun and have friends with and hang out with people in my neighborhood, I had to learn English. So I went to a French school. So from 8 to 4, all French. I get home, I play with my friends, started to learn English, and that's how I became bilingual.
Where did the Creole then come in?
Oh, so my parents are from Haiti. So at home, they spoke Creole most of the time. So I had to kind of, so if I wanted to communicate with them.
Yeah, you had to know.
You know, I had to learn how to speak Creole, and we went to a Haitian church, so everything was done. We sang in Creole, we read our Bible in Creole. Our pastor spoke Creole, so I've had to learn Creole. So,
being a mom of three boys, how do they know when they're in trouble? Are you yelling at them in English, French, or Creole,
or all three?
If they're really in trouble, some Creole is going to come out for sure. And they're looking at me like, okay, I'm not understanding what you're saying.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
But it tends to just be in French, usually. Mm-hmm.
So then you said you grew up in Quebec. Your parents then, they lived in Haiti and then moved to Canada. How long were they in Canada before you came along?
So my parents came to Canada in 1982. And I was born in 1985, 3 years after I was born. So they've been here for a while now.
They chose Quebec. Why?
Because the second language in Haiti is French. So for them, it was easier, especially for my dad, because my dad was a principal in Haiti. Hmm. So when they decided to choose where to go, they decided to come to Canada because of the French. And yeah, so that's one of the reasons why they came to Canada.
There's a huge population in Quebec that are Creole, right?
Yes. So the biggest population of Haitians are in Montreal, because there was end of 70s and the beginning of 80s, they went to grab, not grab, but didn't grab anybody. Quebec needed more Francophone teachers, so they solicited more Haitian, because they already knew how to speak French, to come to Quebec and become teachers and principals and stuff. And my parents came in that time.
Well, I'll be honest. I didn't think going into this that we would have a history lesson, but I feel like I'm kind of up to date then. So when it comes to you and growing up, what was life like growing up? Because you said you had to kind of learn English to hang out with the English-speaking kids, but yet you were learning French and you still had, you know, this third language at home.
I think growing up, if I want to go just a little bit deeper, my parents come in, come to Canada, and then a few years later, they get a divorce. So now my dad lives, at that time, lives in Ottawa, and we live in Montreal. So my mom has to start all over again. So we move in a neighborhood where my mom could afford, and everything is completely different. So I'm in a two-parent home, and now I'm in a one-parent home in a neighborhood that do not speak French, you know? So I kind of had to learn to adjust very quickly and be and adapt to this new environment. It was challenging at first, but then, you know, the good thing about being a kid is that you're able to adapt very quickly. You're able to learn a language very easily when you're younger. So we were able to adapt and be flexible to the environment, and that's how I was able to kind of switch from French, English, Creole, and everything else. So,
Was it just you, or did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, so I have two older brothers.
All three of you lived with mom?
Yes, all three of us lived with mom.
How old are you then when they decided to separate?
So they separated, I was 6 years old. So it was kind of like, okay, brand new environment. And the neighborhood we lived in was not the best neighborhood. Like, we went from a single home with a pool, a garden, three stories, to being in an apartment full of bugs and cockroaches and trying to adapt to everything. But by the grace of God, you know, we still had a healthy family dynamic, and we were able to kind of go through it as a family.
So you were still able, you still had a relationship with your dad?
Yes, of course. So at that time, we still saw our dad because he moved to Ottawa. So we would see him every other month, not as often as we wanted to, but we still kept in contact. And at that time, my father started a brand new life, got married, and became a pastor in the city of Ottawa. So that was another adjustment, is now, okay, my dad, who had this career, now is a full-time pastor. So we kind of had to adjust to that as well, and also not being there full-time.
Was faith always then a big part of your life?
Yes. So going to church and going to prayer and being a part of the youth was super important. Our parents was really adamant to make sure that we were part of a church. My dad, when we were all together, was a deacon at the church at the time. So, and my mom was part of the women's choir. So church culture was really part of our lives since I was born.
We often hear, and like myself even personally, there's that difference between church culture and then having that personal relationship with God. For you, when did that shift happen and God became like your personal savior?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I accepted, and my faith was kind of going all over the place, but dealing with my parents' divorce, and now my father having a brand new family, and being a pastor, I had to question my faith and church culture for such a long time. But I remember when I turned 17, I joined this amazing church in Ottawa and was part of the choir, part of church culture, but they were really pushing on not necessarily just church culture, but having a personal relationship with God. And at that time, I found out about fasting and praying, so I decided to go on my own personal fast. And through that, I was able to kind of encounter God, and that's how I gave my life to God around 17, and I got baptized when I turned 18.
When did you move from Montreal to Ottawa?
1999. So
you're 14.
Yeah.
So 1999, and it's so funny because my parents got back together.
Oh.
What?
So so my parents got back together. We moved and moved to Ottawa to be with my father, and they had a good 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And then they got another divorce again. So now I was like, okay, I just need to find God for myself.
yeah.
You know? And then I could go further, and they did come back together.
They came back together again?
Again. And
three
then
times?
They didn't work out. Yeah, they're back and forth. I think now they've decided that this is it. We're not going to be with each other.
You're like, this is it. We're going to stay together. I'm like, well, okay. I guess there's that.
How did their relationship then shape your perspective of relationships?
So my mom always says to me, and I don't remember when I had this conversation, but she says, I remember when I got engaged to my husband, she looked at me, she's like, I can't believe that you're getting married, because I remember when you told me that you would never get married. And I'm like, oh, I don't remember this conversation. And she looked at me like, we had this conversation. And I think through seeing my parents going, the divorces of my parents, I think I was not skeptical of love, but skeptical of the whole institute of marriage. I've never was that child who kind of dreamed about a wedding or, oh, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have kids, I'm going to have this, I'm going to have that. Because for me, it was just like, okay, this is just not part of our family. There's no successful marriage in our family, so that's just how it's going to be for me. So I've never really kind of fantasized about marriage, you know? Mm-hmm. But then when I met my husband and his part of his family, where they're very, there's no divorces in his family, where the institute of marriage is very important to them, by looking at my husband's family, that's how I got a little bit of hope when it came to the actual institution and stuff. So it took me a while, but I think meeting my husband made a big difference in my life.
So you're 17, we're thinking graduation, you have these life-changing, you know, this come to Jesus moments, if you will. You have this on-again, off-again relationship with your parents, on-again, off-again relationship. You're not dreaming of that wedding, but you still at some point have to grow up. You got to you graduate high school, you have to maybe go to college or university. Where was your heart at? What did you want to be when you quote-unquote grew up?
Oh, that's a good question. So there's three things in the Haitian culture, okay, is that you become a lawyer, an engineer, or a nurse.
That's it?
So your parents, you know, they come from an impoverished country and they have children. They already have a vision of how they want their children to be. Mm-hmm. So I graduate from high school and I go into the medical field. So in my head, I'm like, okay, eventually I'm going to become a nurse, but first I'm going to do a few classes to become a phlebotomist, and then and then from there go into nursing school. And my heart was not in it, not whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, but I still went through the motions and graduated from college and started my kind of journey to kind of finish nursing school. And then I quit and I was like, okay, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. But while I was working as a phlebotomist, I became an office manager for a medical clinic. And then I started liking the aspect of managing and administration. So I kept on going up in our medical clinic, but not necessarily as within the medical field, but mostly in the administration field.
Yeah.
And that's how I kind of build my career as a manager. And now I am one of supervisors for immigration, where now I have 48 agents under me. So I kind of build it from starting as a phlebotomist and then going into medical administration and kind of build up my career this way.
Well, that's not the only thing that you do, though. Let's talk about your relationship with your husband, Ronald. When did you meet him, and how did your family grow from the two of you to five of you?
Yes, I met my husband. So I'm married. Now I'm doing the calculation.
Yeah, carry the two.
Okay, well, is he Haitian as well?
Yes, he's Haitian as well, yeah. So we met in 2006. At that time, my husband was part of, he was working with a magazine called Gospel Generation.
Okay.
And he would, they would have different concerts around the city and around Montreal. And he came to one of our choir practices. I met him from there. I was like, okay. So we kind of started a friendship and we became friends. So around 2007, we kind of worked on a project, a conference in Ottawa. So we had a speaker from the state that was coming. So me and my husband were part of the committee. And we started talking. And there, and then came our, you know, kind of from friendship to courting each other. And then after 6 months of courting, he said that, "You are the one." So it's so funny because it was on my birthday, and at the time I had an apartment in Gatineau, a little apartment, and he broke into my apartment.
That sounds creepy.
Right? Broke into my apartment and left me this box. So it's my birthday. I'm all excited. I get into my house, and I see this box, and I'm like, oh, my God, somebody's trying to kill me. So I open this box and I see it's a tiara and it says bride to be. And he wrote me a letter. He's like, "Oh, I think you're the one, and we're going to get engaged very soon."
Oh, that's sweet.
So that was my birthday present. And then we got engaged in that was in August. We got engaged in November and we got married in June 2008.
Okay.
So we just celebrated our 12-year anniversary.
When it comes to, I mean, and you kind of mentioned it before, the marriage side of things, because you've had parents who are on again, off again with regards to relationships.
Right.
How much going into this marriage and this relationship with your husband, was there worry and concern in that the only other marriage that you really had a chance to see was what your parents went through?
First year of marriage was, my husband and I always say that it had to be one of the hardest year ever. Yeah. Because being married to someone, courting someone and being married to someone is totally different.
Yeah.
We never lived together before that. So we get married, we're in an apartment, and we're getting to know each other. And in my head, I'm always thinking in the back of my head that this man will leave eventually, right?
Yeah.
So due to my parents' relationship, and the fact that there's always one person that ends up leaving, in my head, I would never leave, but I was always kind of prepared in the back of my head to kind of prepare myself emotionally just in case he leaves. So I was in a marriage, but I was not there 100%. You know, and it's so funny because, and bless my mom's heart, it's because of her experience. But when I got married, you know, one of her advice was always be ready in case of.
Yeah.
So I kind of came with that mentality in the marriage where I'm putting my foot in, but I have a foot out just in case something happens. So I was not fully invested, but I always had a plan B.
It's always interesting how the advice that we're given really can impact us in positive or negative ways.
And it's not because it was done to harm me or my relationship. It's that was her experience, and she did not want me to go through the same thing that I went through, right? So sometimes, yes, you have to take the advice, but really see the source of the advice. Is it coming out of their experience, or if it's coming out of prayer or out of something? For her at that time, it's mostly out of her experience. But I took it like if it was gospel, right? Especially a kid from my mom, and I saw her struggle, you know? So I had to really, it took a lot of time for me to be able to be like, okay, this man is not leaving me. He's 100% invested into this marriage, and this is going to work out. And all of my family, you know, I've had the longest relationship, and I'm the youngest in my family. So I feel like there was a lot of pressure, but at the same time, I feel like for the next generation, we could see a healthy family within.
You're leading by example.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And your three boys have an amazing example now of two parents who are making it work.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't see because I've lived with, at their age, I understood what divorce is. Hmm. You know, I understood what separation was. But at their age right now, they see two parents that love each other and work together. So that I'm something that I'm proud of for sure.
And they're how old?
So my oldest is 9 years old. I have a 6-year-old and I have a 4-year-old.
Marriage is tough in general, but then when you start bringing in kids into the relationship, it makes it even harder. And I mean, kids are definitely a blessing, but they're a lot of work.
Right.
What did you guys have the conversation on, you know, because when my wife and I first got married, I'm like, I want 4 kids. She wanted 3. We settled with 2. Did you guys have that? How many did you want? And it was 3 the number?
I don't even think we had this conversation. I don't recall us having a conversation on how many kids we want. Mm-hmm. I think we were just like, okay, we're going to eventually have children, but we didn't really put a number to it. And it's so funny because I'm from a family of 3 and he's a family of 3 and I have 3 kids.
Yeah.
But I was never like, oh, I want 4 kids. And actually, I don't think I was the person. I've never been that person who wanted kids. When I got married, I was like, okay, I'm getting married. It wasn't like, oh, my God, I can't wait to have kids. So when we got pregnant with my oldest, with Micah, it was a surprise to me. And I was like, okay, we're having a baby.
Yeah, this is happening.
Here we go.
This is happening. Okay. And not only, so the pregnancy is going very well, and we're getting excited, we're getting the house set up, and then I give birth to this amazing child. I fall in love with this amazing baby, and 2 weeks after, they tell me that he is diagnosed with an incurable disease called sickle cell disease. I was the wife who had 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
Yeah.
I get this. I'm now in love with my husband. I'm in love with my husband. I love my marriage. I have my 2 foot in the marriage. And I get pregnant, and now I have another mountain to cross over, to mm-hmm. deal with. And our lives totally change. That's when everything turns upside down. And we're no longer just parents, we're caregivers now.
So with sickle cell, I mean, we have had a guest on before who's done some of the newer treatments, but I mean, a few years ago, there was really nothing that they could do.
Right. So I feel like sickle cell is still a disease that we're still trying to find better treatment to treat it. Mm-hmm. Better treatment to treat the disease. At that time, it's going to be almost 10 years now because my oldest is going to be 10 in 2 days, in 4 days, I mean. So when we get the diagnosis with sickle cell, we don't know what to do. We don't know nothing about this disease. I knew, though, I knew I had the sickle cell trait, but my husband did not know he had the sickle cell trait. And when you have 2 parents with sickle cell trait, you have a chance, 1 in 4 chances to have a child that ends up with the disease. And our lives changes, and now we have to get some information. Is it curable? Is it something that we could do? And one thing that they say, that one of the cures at that time was a bone marrow transplant, which is very expensive, which they usually offer that treatment to kids or adults who are really having a hard time with dealing with sickle cell, where it's really hard for them to kind of deal with the disease. So it's not necessarily a treatment option for our family right now.
For those who don't know, quickly explain, what is sickle cell?
So sickle cell disease is a blood disease that affects your hemoglobin. So everybody has hemoglobins that are round shape, kind of like the size of a donut, that has kind of like a curve in the middle that carries oxygen in your body. But when someone has sickle cell, it affects your hemoglobin, where your red blood cells is kind of cut in half into a crescent shape. So because of that, it doesn't carry oxygen throughout your body, and you're not producing a healthy red blood cell. So what happens is that one of the issues that you get with sickle cell is that because they're not round, the blood cells are not, the red blood cells are not kind of bouncing from each other, so they tend to stick together, which causes crisis in the body. And crisis is basically when the red blood cells are kind of stuck together, causing kind of a cramp or causing very sharp pains in your body. It could be on your back, it could be on your knees, your hands, your elbow, it could be all over your body. Mm-hmm. And also what sickle cell does, because you're not producing enough healthy red blood cells, your immune system is very low, which you are more vulnerable to having a viral infection and bacterial infections. So example, a child that has a cold, fighting a little virus, you know, after a few days, maybe with some Advil and Tylenol, it tends to go away. But with the sickle cell patient, it could cause a crisis, and you have to basically be at the hospital for 3 or 4 days. So we have to find different antibiotics to fight the disease. So one little cold could totally disabilitate a whole family or your routine just for a little cold. So, and also what it does is because your body is not producing healthy red blood cells, it tends to affect your smaller organs, such as your spleen, your gallbladder. Unfortunately, two of my sons had to get their spleen removed, and one, my youngest, had to get his gallbladder removed because there was not enough oxygen and good red blood cells going through that organs. It brought organ failure in those two organs of the body.
So all three of your children have sickle cell?
So only my oldest and my youngest, and it totally skipped my middle child. He has no sickle cell, and he doesn't even have the trait.
Here's what I'm wondering, though. So you have your first son. He's diagnosed with this. You're a carrier. Your husband's a carrier. So essentially, there's a 25% chance that the next child that you have could have this. Was there questions then, maybe we don't want any more kids because we don't want all of our kids to have to go through this?
Yes, we did have. It's so funny because I always tell people that all my three children are a surprise.
I don't know how it's a surprise. I can tell you how it happens.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
But, but you know what? For my second child, though, we did want another child. And we really looked at each other. We're like, okay, if we do end up being pregnant, you know, let's pray that this child doesn't have sickle cell. You know, let's go by faith. So we end up being pregnant. We're like, okay, so now we're holding on to the promise. This child doesn't have sickle cell. And then we give birth to this wonderful child, and he doesn't have sickle cell. So in our head, we're like, oh, okay. So we can have children with no sickle cell.
Yeah.
So when we get pregnant with a third one, we're like, this child is not going to have sickle cell. God already did the miracle on the second one, you know? So no, we prayed and this child didn't have sickle cell. So we know for sure, because God is faithful, right? Mm-hmm. That we're not going to have our third child with sickle cell, but God had other plans.
Yeah.
God had other plans, and our child had sickle cell. So we had to deal with, like, okay, all right, that was your will, God, then let's deal with it. But if we go into the why me, the third child, that's when I started questioning, okay, God, what's going on? You know, now it was more of the, okay, so what did I do wrong for me to have two kids with sickle cell? Like, what's going on? So there was a lot of why me situation, especially when we got the diagnosis with the third one. It was like, okay, I'm trying to understand. I'm faithful. I go to church. I serve at the church. We pay our tithes. Mm-hmm. We do everything that we're supposed to do, right? So, okay, why sickle cell? And then it was the, okay, but I'm praying for healing, you know, and I believe that you are a healer. So why are you not healing my children? I had a lot of questions. But also, through times and really understanding the disease and really understanding everything, it was the why me changed to why not me? You know, mm-hmm. And I thought about it and I prayed about it. And one of the answers that I got from God and totally changed everything, my perspective, everything. And it was like, I don't want to go too deep, but in my revelation, it was like, if God knows everything before the foundation of the world, he already had Micah and Joachim in his mind, and he already had them with sickle cell, you know? Okay, these two will have sickle cell disease. And for me, it was a matter of who would be the best parents to raise these children. I feel like now, with a lot of prayer, I was like, okay, I was chosen to be their parent.
That's not an overnight thing, though, because that's probably something that you struggled with for a long time. How long were you going through this process?
It changed 2 years ago.
Okay.
And my oldest 2 years ago was 7, 8, and my youngest was 2. So it took a while. It took a good 7, 8 years for me to realize and to get into that revelation. And I'm not saying that if they're not, when my son, so my youngest had surgery in December, on December 5th, I'm not going to say that it was all roses when I was at the hospital, when I was waiting in the waiting room while he was having surgery, getting his spleen removed and his gallbladder removed. The thoughts, you know, the doubts and everything else was still there, you know.
Yeah.
But then do I nurse those thoughts or do I go back to the Word? And I think that's when it is. It's do you stay in those doubts? Do you stay in that feeling or do you go back to the promise? So I think it's an everyday thing. I think you wake up and you have to constantly and change your mentality. There's some days where when their kids are very sick, my heart is broken. I have to make a conscious decision that I'm not going to stay in there.
The reason why I ask is how long did it take you to get to where you are now? Because there are probably parents who are going through, it might not be sickle cell, it could be something completely different. But
right.
They're asking those questions, you know, God, why my child? Why me? Why am I going through this? You're not getting the answer overnight. It's not in a week from now, you were over the fact that your son and now sons have this, but it took you 7 or 8 years to climb that mountain to finally see what God's plans were for you and your family.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you said, it's not an overnight thing. I think it's, I cannot tell you guys that I sometimes do not go back. I think it's something that we're as parents of children who are sick, I think we're always going to have questions, mm-hmm. You know, we're always going to have, not doubt, but just, you know, you're going to have those conversations with God, you know, especially when your child is suffering or at the hospital, you know, you have those conversations with God on a daily basis, but your behavior in it changes. It's no longer it's not why me, but it's like, God, give me strength so we could kind of go through it together.
You really took that and ran with it when you say that God chose you to raise those boys.
Yeah.
You've done a lot during this phase of your life to bring awareness to sickle cell and to help other families that are going through that. Share with us a little bit about some of those things you guys have had the opportunity to do since this revelation.
Yeah, so a year and a half ago, Ronald and I, we decided to become active in our sickle cell community. My husband was already active at least 2 years before I did. For me, it took a lot of time before I got active and being an advocate because I did not want to be an advocate for sickle cell.
Why?
And the reason why is in my head is that it did not click for me how I could be an advocate for sickle cell and still pray for healing for my kids. And for me, I couldn't connect both.
Hmm.
I had a hard time. For me, I was like, I'm not going to advocate for something that I know that eventually my kids are going to be healed from. But God really had to kind of, I feel like, I told this to my husband. I feel like he arrested me in that thought. And one thing that I heard a year and a half ago, and that's the reason why I jumped into writing a book, was that one thing that he told me is like, there's no healing if you don't bring hope to others. You know,
that's powerful.
He's like, you're going to have to accept it so I could heal it. You're going to have to expose it so I could heal it. One thing I tell people when I talk about sickle cell, a lot of people, even in our family, did not know my kids had sickle cell because I didn't want to tell anybody that this was a struggle in our home. We just didn't show up to birthday parties, or we didn't go to any pool parties with my kids, but they never understood why we didn't go, you know, because I never wanted to kind of speak on it. So a year and a half ago, we decided, you know what? The world is just going to know this is our family story, our story as a family. And I decided to write a children's book about it.
So is the book called The Battle of Sickle Cell or what?
No, it's actually called The Battle of Autogods. So it's about three young boys who have superpowers that are superhero in their city, and they fight a bacteria that is bringing sickness.
I love the concept of it, by the way.
Thank you. And Autogots is a combination of Ottawa and Gatineau, because we only have a bridge that separates Ottawa and Gatineau. So in our book, it's one big city.
Very cool. I love that the book is raising awareness when it comes to sickle cell. And it's also a book, you know, about three boys who are Black. And there's such a lack of representation that it's so great. There's now another comic book out there where little boys and girls can see themselves as heroes.
Yes, most definitely. And, you know, my kids are fanatics of Marvel comics and as well as DC comics. Mm-hmm. So when we go to different libraries, it's hard to find books that represent them, you know, especially in the Quebec. I feel like in Ontario, we could still find a little bit more of books in the library that kind of have representation. But in Quebec, it was really hard. So it was really important for me to not only write about sickle cell, but also bring awareness and bring diversity in our libraries with this book. And I wrote a children's book. I did not know I would be an author. That, like, my life totally changed in that aspect. You have ideas of what you want to be when you grow up, but now I am a children's author. So, yeah.
Holly and I have had this conversation many times about, you know, how important it's for her daughters to have, like, a Black Barbie or a Black doll or something that would represent her and her family.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important, though, when it comes to you and your husband for your boys?
I feel like there's such an, I don't want to go political, but sometimes I feel like there's a narrative that is out there in our society, especially when it comes to Black boys. I live in a small town. Gatineau is still kind of a small town in Quebec. Though it is just separated from Ontario, it's totally different. And we live in a neighborhood where there's not a lot of Black kids. So my kids would come back with their heart broken due to comments or people saying stuff to them. And I've always told them that you are more than this. You are more than your skin color. You are not this. I'm always kind of fighting the narrative that is out there and kind of bring positivity. But then when we go to the library and I'm trying to find a book that has as main characters Black boys, it was hard for me to find. So how do I read to them, and how do I explain to them that they are great and that they're superheroes and that they're amazing boys, where I can't find a book with them as the main characters?
Yeah.
So it was really important for me to not only write a book, but to have them, my three sons, as the main characters of the book, so they could see themselves as superheroes, but other boys could see themselves as superheroes as well.
With everything that is going on as of late, and there's conversations that are continually going on, Are your boys too young to have that conversation? At what age should we be having these conversations with our kids?
I don't think it's too young to have the conversation. I think the minute that they get to school, that's when we should have the conversation, because the other kids are already having those conversations. Mm-hmm. I remember my oldest when he got to, what's McDonald in English?
Oh, kindergarten.
Kindergarten, yay!
I know that one, because my kid goes to French immersion.
I'm like, I don't know, it doesn't sound legit.
Do I get a point?
Yeah.
You get a point. He gets to kindergarten, and 2 weeks in kindergarten, a child tells him he looks like the number two. He comes in the house, he's like, Mom, somebody told me I look like number two. And he is devastated. And I'm like, okay, so, oh my God, I have to have this conversation with him.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks after, he gets into a conversation with another child that tells him, oh, people of your color are poor. So he comes back in the house and he's like, okay, this is the second conversation I have this.
Yeah.
Are we poor and do I look like number two?
Oh, man.
So now I'm like, okay, we're having this conversation. Because other children are having their own opinion on your skin color, yeah, and on your race.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage every parent to have those conversations, even before they even get to kindergarten, to have those conversations.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because a lot of people may assume that these things aren't happening. And yet,
yeah,
here your son is engaging with other five-year-olds, you know, in kindergarten,
yeah,
and they've already formed those sorts of opinions. And
yeah,
so it is so important to make sure that we have those conversations.
Yeah, and
yeah,
I find it interesting too, though, because Holly and I have had these conversations,
mm-hmm,
in that, you know, these are conversations that you're having with your sons, the conversations that Holly's having with her daughters. But yet, when it comes to my son or my daughter, we talk about, you know, kindness or being nice, loving God, loving,
yeah,
people. It's never been about, oh, because you're white, you know, we just, that's not a topic of conversation that I ever thought would have to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, as a parent, when you have your child, you don't think to have those conversations either. It's when something happens or things are happening in our news, in our culture, that's when it's like it triggers you to like, oh, I cannot forget to have this conversation, you know? And I don't believe that any children have those talks.
Mm-hmm.
It's learned behavior, you know?
Yeah.
And you having those conversations with your daughters about kindness and loving other people, when they come to school, they're going to mimic that, right? Because this is what you're teaching them. So it's hard, because you cannot be upset at a child, because you know it's not their fault. Nobody, no child is born with a racist thought.
What has been the reaction from the book for those? I mean, you had this goal in mind on,
yes,
you know, knowledge is power, and not only about sickle cell, but you know,
yeah,
raising up strong Black men.
Yeah.
Have you had a positive response from that?
Yes, I have, and what the crazy thing is that it the book got released around the time of the incident that happened with George Floyd,
yeah,
in Minneapolis. And so our culture and our world was already having those kind of conversations, right? And then we released our book, and two things happened. A lot of comments about, oh my gosh, thank you for writing a book, having three boys on the cover, being the main characters. We love it. Thank you. It brings so much representation. But also it brought awareness to a disease that affects African descent population. So it became two things where, wow, I did not know that was the disease that affects your people.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of brought two kinds of, one it was representation and the other one was more awareness.
Who would have thought when you were starting to write these books that this would be the impact your books were having on people?
It's so crazy. And another thing is, like, somebody read the book is like, oh my God, because they're fighting a bacteria. They're like, they're fighting coronavirus.
Never even thought about that. Yeah. I didn't put that
together. Not even think about it, right? So I'm like, everything kind of just fell into play. This is just God's timing. I did not plan this.
Yeah. How could you? I mean,
yeah.
Some things are out of our control, and now you've almost essentially written the children's book of 2020. Just sums
right.
up everything.
Exactly. I didn't know, like, when I wrote the book, I wrote it with the thought of my children, right? I wrote this book for them, right? So now that it's out there in the world and people know about our story and we're bringing awareness to sickle cell and everything else that's happening, it's just like, I'm just amazed at God. Right? How he was able to take this little thing and make it so big.
And to think 3 years ago, this would not have been on your radar.
Not at all. Not at all whatsoever.
So if we want to get it, where can we pick it up?
So you could get it on Amazon. Okay. It's available on Kindle and paperback. So you could type The Battle of Autogatz, OTTOGATZ. And also right now you could pre-order the French version of the book, which is going to be released on back to school around the 26th of August. So the book is going to be fully bilingual and it's going to be available all over the world in the two French and English.
What about Creole?
I thought about Creole, I thought about Spanish.
Yes.
But then I have to find different translators. But I'm thinking about it. We might make this international.
I like it when people dream big.
That's right.
Again, you can pick the book up Amazon, Naomi Aislinn on Instagram and Facebook. We appreciate you taking a minute, sharing your heart, and a real conversation about things that are going on that sometimes we might not even realize is happening.
Right. Thank you for the opportunity. And everybody, please go purchase the book on Amazon.
Big thank you once again to Naomi Aislinn for taking some time and sharing her heart and her story. Make sure you pick up her book. And thank you to everybody who has downloaded on places like Apple Podcast, on Spotify. You could reach out to us, whymeproject@outlook.com, on whymeproject on all platforms as well, Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to hear maybe your thoughts as to an upcoming guest. Maybe you do have a good idea. Or check out faithstrongtoday.com. Oh.